Oh, there's no place like home for the horror days. 'Cause no matter how far away you run, they will find you and gut you in a million ways. For the horror days, you can't beat home, sweet home.
Excuse me, did we revive old Blue Eyes and get him on the podcast? What a privilege. Bing Crosby, who I don't even know
if
he's
Perry
the one
Como,
who...
you fucking clown. And old Blue Eyes was Sinatra.
I don't know singers.
We dipped into our Patreon fund and paid Perry Como's ghost tens of dollars to be here tonight. Gentle friends, it is time once again for Home for the Horror Days. Hello and welcome to Christmas Creeps. I am your host, Joseph Wade. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
What's up?
And Mr. Bradford is here as well.
I live again, boyos.
And one good can deserves another.
Can check.
Oh, boy. I've got with me here tonight a Sycamore Beer Pumpkin Latte Blonde, because I am the most basic boy in the universe.
Oh, my God. That, yeah, a little bit. Blonde? They even added blonde to, oh, I'm thinking like blonde roast, but pumpkin latte,
yeah, basically
blonde.
It's a blonde ale with coffee and spices.
How's that treating you?
It's very smooth. Bradford, what you got going, buddy?
I'm drinking an Aslan Soaking the Dishes. It's a double hopped dry IPA. Double dry hopped IPA.
Is it double brewed with dish soap?
Thankfully, no. And it doesn't taste like dish soap. Although some people might argue IPAs taste like dish soap, but I'm not one of them.
See, now that makes me wonder, if you brewed beer with cilantro, would some people think it tasted like soap?
I think so, and I think those beers, I'm pretty sure there are a good number of beers with coriander in them. Just the seeds, not cilantro leaf.
Right, but that would be an interesting taste test. I'm curious to know if anybody has tasted soap in their coriander-flavored beer.
Maybe.
If you're out there listening and you know anything about this, please let us know. Gentle friends, it is 80 days till Christmas. I forgot to say it in the intro, but we are once again...
I fucked up.
In the throes of Home for the Horror Days, our October Horror Fest, where we watch horror-themed Christmas movies, because there are quite a few of those out there in the world.
Or are they Christmas-themed horror movies?
You know, it's six of one and half dozen of the other, to be perfectly honest.
I think that has to be a new criteria for, in addition to the crankometer when we do Home for the Horror Days, we have to determine if it's a Christmas-themed horror movie or a horror-themed Christmas movie. Because I feel like there's a distinction between those two.
I mean, basically, that scale is like, Nightmare Before Christmas is like right at the center of that axis, right? And the scale is which direction your film falls, more toward the horror or more toward the Christmas. That's kind of how I see it.
Okay.
But, you know, that's a scale, that's a work in progress. We can hash that out later. Tonight, friends, is an episode that has kind of been a long time coming, because we have been getting requests to do an episode on Santa's Sleigh for at least 3 years. We're finally making good on that promise.
Yes.
So, Jakob, and I believe Booker and a couple of other people as well, have asked us to do Santa's Sleigh. So here it is. We watched Santa's Sleigh, starring Bill Goldberg, from 2005. Gentle friends, first impressions.
I think the silence speaks for itself.
I thought it was okay.
Not the worst thing we've watched.
Not by a long shot the worst thing that we've watched.
For the most part, it knew exactly how stupid it was going to be in a good way.
Yes. Had either of you seen this before?
No, sir. No, sirree, Bob.
Nope.
I can tell you, though, I distinctly remember, like, being in college and seeing this on the rack at the Blockbuster Video in town. Remember video stores, everybody?
Yes. There's still one that's hanging on near where I live, but I doing a little digging, it turns out it's actually just a porn store that uses a video store as its front. It has had the same... Remember the movie Hall Pass?
Oh, yeah.
The poster for Hall Pass is still up in its window, and it's turned, like, blue.
That's gotta be, like, 10 years old at this point, right?
I believe so.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
Anyways, remember video stores. You saw this in the video store.
I saw this in the video store, and I distinctly recall, like, picking it up and looking at it and being there with my roommate at the time, and my roommate, like, grabbing it out of my hand and putting it back and saying, no, fuck you, we're not renting that. And then walking out in a huff.
I feel like you would have had a good time with this in college in 2005.
I absolutely would have had a good time with this in college. It would have been a great time. But, yeah. You know, my roommate at the time was very much an anti-fun roommate, so... None of that.
What did you guys end up renting? Ken Burns Baseball, which is a good doc, I'm just saying. If they're anti-fun, what kind of movie did they have?
They just end up sitting in chairs opposite each other, just glaring at each other for the entire night.
They rented Schindler's List for the 14th time.
Honestly, we probably wound up watching Farscape or some bullshit like that on TV.
Okay.
These are the kind of nerds that I hung out with in college. But that's my story. Have either of you had like any encounters with Santa's sleigh before? That's a weird statement, that question, but I'm going to ask it.
No.
I mean, Grandma got run over by a reindeer, but other than that, not really. Is that the kind of encounter with Santa's sleigh you're talking about?
Yeah, sure, why not?
It should be noted for anybody that can't read or some reason is listening to this without looking at the episode of the podcast. The title is a pun. It's Santa's Sleigh, S-L-A-Y. One of many to come in this movie.
This pun-filled goof-a-thon of a horror movie. I'm not even sure this is technically really a horror film. It's more
of a comedy, I would argue.
Yeah, it's too jokey to be really a serious horror film. But not for the lack of trying, because some of the kills in this are very gruesome.
I feel like most of the... We'll get into this, but I feel like most of the gruesome kills are in the first 5 minutes of this movie, along with most of everything else is in the first 5 minutes of this movie.
It would be interesting to identify the point where horror and comedy kind of diverged to an extent, because if you look at Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, anything from the 80s, they were just all jokes. Like, the entire point was jokes and death. And then it split off somewhere... in the early 2000s, I think, where the jokes became super jokey, and then the other side of it, you just had, like, bullshit like fucking Hostel.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. Like, at a certain point, it veered off, and it became torture porn and parodies of torture porn. Or, no, just parodies of horror. But, so Santa's Sleigh...
Was the inflection point Scary Movie? Maybe?
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 I don't know. I hate to continue going back to this well, and I guess if you're making a drinking game out of this podcast, take a drink now, because I want to say the inflection point was 9/11. Things just stopped fun after 9/11, including horror movies. Can you name a fun horror movie between 2001 and 2005?
When did Cabin in the Woods? Cabin in the Woods was way later than 2005, right?
Yeah, like 2012, I want to say. Well, I mean, 2005 is exactly when this comes out, so...
Right.
I want to say that initial hangover sort of wears off, and then here comes Santa's sleigh. But then, okay, so I guess the best way to talk about this is to start with the opening scene. That strange, bizarre, star-studded opening scene. So it's this horrible, just disgusting, like, American family. And the father is James Caan. The mother is Fran Drescher.
There's like a pool boy or something. He's hitting on the daughter and also groping Fran at the same time. I don't really understand what's going on with that.
Yeah, Chris Kattan from SNL is groping Fran Drescher like under the table. Meanwhile, he's looking over at his wife, who's played by Rebecca Gayhart. And it's just there. It's just this horrible, like, weird triangle of unfaithfulness and terrible feelings and terrible people.
Yeah, like, the entire scene is basically just like, hey, whore, will you pass the turkey? It is a knowing parody of shitty, like, Dennis Leary, Merry Fucking Christmas type bullshit.
basically, yeah. But what was interesting to me is that Rebecca Gayheart is here. And if you remember her from anything else that we've watched, it's the only one thing we've watched, but it's The Christmas Blessing, Christmas Shoes Part 2. She's the school teacher with a bum ticker in Christmas Shoes 2.
With a bum ticker.
And I had to look this up because I was curious. Both of these films were shot in Edmonton, Canada in 2004.
That's efficiency.
That's efficiency. So I have to wonder if this scene was shot later or before. I'm not sure. But it was shot because they knew that she was in town shooting another Christmas movie. And I have to assume that the answer was yes.
Yeah, they just gave her $500 to show up for an hour.
Yeah. But anyway, so this horrible family is having Christmas dinner. And then all of a sudden, Santa Claus busts through the chimney. Santa Claus, played by former WCW champion Bill Goldberg, decked out in actually a really cool Santa Claus costume. Very unique as far as Santa costumes go. And he just straight up murders the entire family.
It's got sort of like a Viking slash Vlad the Impaler sort of thing going on, if you need to imagine this costume.
Like the Santa cap is actually like kind of a Viking cap with the bolting on it and all things like that. And he's got the long hair and the long beard and the gauntlets and giant boots, and he's ready for fucking battle. And he destroys his entire family one by one. He sets Fran Drescher's hair on fire. He
kicks the dog.
He kicks Chris Kattan straight into like a curio like
cabinet.
And then he stabs James Caan with two kitchen knives and it's like basically sticks him to the table. It's horrifying, and I don't understand why this is in the movie.
He chokes him with a drumstick and then slams his head into the table so that the drumstick, like, impales the back of his throat.
Yep.
Let me just say, we watched Silent Night, Deadly Night 3, and I remember how underwhelming and boring that movie was. This 5 minutes has more sweet kills than the entirety of Silent Night, Deadly Night 3.
I think just I kind of figured out idea. The linchpin here that we were missing, and it explains this. It's Scream.
Scream.
The first 5 minutes where they just kill off Drew Barrymore, just say they have Drew Barrymore in the movie. The entire point of this scene is to be like, look, Chris Kattan and Fran Drescher, names you've heard of, are in this movie.
That makes
Fran Drescher's cleavage is in this movie.
That makes way, way too much sense. So yeah, absolutely. But again, it makes me wonder if that was like the selling point for the film, or if that came after as an afterthought. Like, oh, this is the only way we're going to get anybody to watch this movie. Because the rest of the movie is...
Nobody.
It's not quite as interesting as any of this, but it's still, you know, kind of fun.
There's a couple of names in the rest of the movie, though.
Yeah. Speaking of Silent Night, Deadly Night 3, though, the star of that film, Robert Culp, is here as the grandpa.
It all comes around.
This is the only time I think we can ever say a film starring this featuring the stars of Silent Night, Deadly Night 3 and The Christmas Shoes Part 2 are in this film.
And also Doug's in it.
Doug?
Doug Funny?
No, Doug McKenzie.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dave Thomas is here as a sleazy pastor. The sleazy pastor who goes to the strip club and watches everybody get murdered by Santa Claus and then slips out the back door.
And then gets impaled on a flagpole at the end. Spoiler alert.
Whoops-a-doodle. Who would like to explain the plot of this movie? I've done enough setup. I would like to hand it off to one of you gentlemen.
It takes a while to get here. I'll do it.
Okie dokie. We're not going to donate money to this because this is honestly not feeling it this week.
Yeah, I get you there. So I'll be a little more... Actually, I'm going to be fairly direct about this. The central conflict in the plot, which, again... Santa's killing a bunch of folks. We don't know why for a good 30 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, I want to point out this movie's only like 70 minutes long, but it still takes a fucking minute to get to the point.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it turns out that back in 1005, right? Because this takes place in 2005. 1005. So you have Jesus, who is Son of God, born of Mary, Immaculate Conception. But it turns out that there is a foil to that. And that is Santa, who was born also in an Immaculate Conception, son of Satan. And he does his thing, terrorizing people, being the son of Satan, what have you. And I guess he's immortal for some reason. And so he terrorizes people and has a day where he celebrates his birth. I guess he was also born on Christmas, where he goes around killing people because that's what he does. And in 10:05, an angel comes down and challenges him to a bet. There's a hole in the ice because he's ice fishing. They also do like this weird stop motion animation for this part and only this part, which is interesting.
But it's also told over the opening credits of the film and as pages of a book that's being turned.
But you don't necessarily know what that's all about at the very beginning.
Okay, so I saw those credits and I wrote down what I thought the story was. What I thought the backstory.
Okay.
Opening credits tell a story. Quote, Satan was cursed by an angel to bring gifts and joy to humanity for 1,000 years, becoming Santa Claus. But now the 1,000 years is up and he's free to wreak havoc anew.
Well, you basically got it. Just not the origin part. It's the son of Satan. He challenges him to a bet, slide a stone towards a hole in the ice, whoever gets the closest without going in, wins the bet, and I guess Santa didn't think about curling rules, and I guess curling didn't exist at this point. They play it up as, like, this precursor to curling. Anyways, he slides a rock there, and then the angel just does the thing where you bounce the rock far away with your own rock. And it falls into the hole. So he has to become good and spread joy and cheer for 1,000 years. But 1,000 years is up. It's 2005. And so he's back to killing. And he is specifically seeking out a specific grandpa in Hell Township. Which I guess is... I know there's a hell in Michigan, right? I believe it's somewhere in like Michigan or Wisconsin or something like that.
There's a hell in Michigan, I think. And there's a hell in the Bahamas. But it's definitely not that one.
Yeah. Oh, I guess it is Michigan, because I think the flagpole at the end is an American flag, so it's not Canada. Anyways, it's Hell Township, Michigan, and he is hunting down our main character's grandpa for some reason, which we will find out later. Main character is a teenage boy, and his
named Nick.
Nicholas, because of course.
Of course he is.
And his beau, Mike, I think?
Mac?
Mac. And they work together at a deli. And they're kind of like off again, off again, off again, off again, off again, on again. They're kind of like hot, you know, traditional movie couple. They're hot and cold, whatever. Yeah,
because we're going to keep doing this, I'll point out her name is Mary McKenzie and they call her Mac.
Yeah.
Because we're going to keep mixing it up and calling her Mary a bunch until someone explains it.
Okay.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's kind of all you need to know, honestly.
Yeah, basically.
So it turns out that Nick's grandpa is the angel from the story, for some reason, made flesh. And
but we have to go through some Christmas cliches first, because, of course, the grandpa is an inventor, because this is a Christmas movie. A secondary character has to be an inventor.
Right. He's an inventor. He's also the keeper of a book, which tells all of this story that we get an info dump about halfway through the movie when Nick actually ends up reading the book. And, yeah, he figures out that Santa must be stopped. There's a weird shoehorned time mechanism where he gets an alarm clock at the beginning of the movie.
With how short this movie is, this might actually benefit from a chronological explanation.
Okay.
That's true, yeah.
Go on.
So, when it starts out, Santa kills all those people, then Santa ends up blowing the town into hell. We see a couple scenes at the deli where they work, where the deli owner gives Nick a Games Illustrated, like, time zone clock, which he carries around for a little bit. The deli owner is incredibly Jewish, isn't it? Who is the actor?
Mr. Green, played by Saul Rubinek.
Saul Rubinek.
Yeah.
So he gives him that. Then, they go back home. It's very early played up that Mary is, like, the most country-ass, like, country gal imaginable. She's driving a huge pickup. She brings over, like, dead Wolverine or something to the grandpa later.
Oh, yes. God, yeah. So she brings his grandpa, like, a plate of, like, dead Wolverine meat, and he, like, he opens the tinfoil to look at it, and it's just this, like, hairy glob of just flesh. It's disgusting. It's honestly one of the scarier parts of the film, because good
Lord. But, yeah, it's very much played up around the edges that she is country folk, basically.
And her dad is, like, a huge gun nut. Which yes, we'll get to.
Sure.
That's when they do they is, Santa shows up first at the strip club after the church scene. We have the church scene with Pastor Dave Thomas being like, you know, donate all your money to the needy, giving a pretty it's obviously insincere, but a pretty passionate speech about, like, you know, give to the needy like you mean it type of thing.
Right, as he says, like, don't give the coins. I see you putting coins in the dish. Don't put the coins in the dish. Give the needy dollar bills. Get them dollar bills, y'all.
dollar bill, y'all.
Yes, yeah, please give the needy singles for Santa.
Yes.
So he shows up at the strip club, which has valets of all fucking things.
Yeah, bullshit. Okay, whatever.
I do love how the movie takes a lot of this stupid shit in stride. Like, Santa shows up with his sleigh pulled by they call it a hell deer. It's basically a buffalo.
It's a buffalo, yeah.
And the valet gets in the sled like he's going to go park it.
And gets devoured by the hell deer.
Yeah, Santa kills just about everybody at the strip club.
Why not?
Why not? The pastor escapes.
Can I tell you this? The craziest part of that entire scene, though, and it may be the part that I shouldn't be focusing on, but
what's
in
that?
Unprecedented times, I have to notice, it's that the bartender is cutting limes straight onto the bar. He's not using a cutting board or anything. He's cutting limes straight onto the bar, this dingy fucking strip club.
I think he's being like, the vodka will sanitize it.
They just didn't have a cutting board in the bar set. Like, nobody thought to buy one, so they just rolled with it. I totally forgot about that. I just saw the knife and I was like, oh, Chekhov's knife, basically.
Yeah.
But that actually didn't come. I don't think they... I think he tried to attack Santa with the knife at some point, but Santa didn't kill anybody.
He was holding it up while Santa threw another guy onto the knife, is what happened.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
We got some interesting kills here. This is probably the second biggest scene in terms of kills in the entire movie after the intro scene.
Oh, no question, because, like, he fights every single bouncer in the bar and kills them one, you know, in one way or another. And then,
go ahead.
No, and what he's doing is he's basically, like, sparing all the strippers, and once he kills all the bouncers, he like sets a thing on fire and looks at them all and says, "Naughty." And he sets the entire club on fire. And
he, like, sets a piece of coal on fire and throws it in there, and it just goes up like a fucking match.
So,
presumably to kill all of the strippers inside.
There's one thing I will give this movie credit for, and up until this point, we still haven't gotten the info dump.
Right.
Up until this point, everybody he's killed, this is when he killed the bouncer, this is when my theory went out the window. Like, everybody he'd killed up to this point was, like, a reprehensible human being. We had the family at the opening who's just terrible in every possible way. Then we had, like, an old lady who is just a wretch of a human being. And then
I'm old, fuck you.
Yeah. I thought he was going after the pastor, but once he started killing the bouncers, I was like, these bouncers are just trying to do their job, man.
Well, no, the first bouncer was just immediately just an asshole to him, though, just out of nowhere. Like, I got what they were setting up, but, like, the bouncer was just like, it's the guy just like Santa, I'm gonna fucking punch him.
No. You have the valet who he kills, who is an asshole, but then the bouncer is just, like, sitting in there, just minding things, and then he pulls, like, a stripper and kisses her, and then that's, you know... The guy's just trying to do his job, hands off the girls, and then that's when all hell breaks loose. And that's where the theory that he was only killing, like, naughty people goes out the window. Right. I don't know if that was where they were originally going with the script and then just decided, oh, he's going to kill everybody, whether they're naughty or nice.
Robot Santa. He judges everyone a little too harshly.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It probably would have been a little bit smarter to have him, like, have a very severe... Kind of like, to evoke another recent movie, Kind of like in Santa Claus 2, just a little too strict reading of whether people are naughty or nice. Oh, you jaywalked back in May? Naughty. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, if this movie had ended with Goldberg Santa giving some dumb kid a pogo stick, it would have been A+ fantastic.
He gives Nick a new Razor scooter because it's 2005 and Nick has a Razor scooter.
Yeah, basically.
It's also kind of hilarious. Nick, his main mode of transportation is a Razor scooter, and then his girlfriend Mary drives like a fucking 80s Ford pickup.
Oh yeah.
It's like Marty's pickup from Back to the Future with the giant lights on top.
Yeah.
So then Santa kills the deli owner, Mr. Green, with the deli where they both work. He stabs him with a menorah.
That's pretty, I feel like this kill was more gruesome just from the fact that it's got like a blunted top where the candles are supposed to go in.
Yeah, that's...
If it was sharp, it would actually be less of a gruesome kill, I think, you know?
True. But like, I had to notice, he not only, you know, kills him with the menorah, he spears him, does his wrestling move, he spears him through the deli counter, which was fantastic. I was waiting for, you know, Goldberg Santa to do one of his wrestling moves on somebody, and all we got was a spear. But
did anybody think it was interesting that he didn't kill the Amish people, and that's the only people that he just walked by?
They weren't Amish. They were like Hasidic Jews.
Yeah, no. They were...
Well, they called them Amish. Like, the cops call them Amish.
Yeah, because the cops are dumb as fuck.
Oh, that's the joke. Because I thought they were Hasidic Jews because they had like the coils and the hats going on. But then I just took it at face value because it was past midnight, and Brad doesn't think past midnight. But he kills the deli owner, so I guess it's not like a... I don't understand, like, why he didn't... Those were the only people that... Do they have, like, some sort of anti-Santa cloaking device situation going on? I don't understand.
It is a mystery.
Also, why I would more... I guess the reason that I went with the whole Amish thing, besides the fact that they said it, is I would believe that a rural township in Michigan would be more likely to have Amish than a Hasidic Jew population, but maybe that's just me. I don't know.
The movie has a lot of Jewish actors in it. I mean, it's just Goldberg, it's all Rubinek. Every single actor or actress in the opening scene, like the little opening bit, is Jewish as well.
Fran Drescher, James Caan, Saul Rubinek, every single one of them is Jewish. It's an odd choice, but it also feels very deliberate, too.
But that doesn't answer the question, is why does Santa not kill those folks and nobody else? He kills literally everybody else he comes into contact with in this film, or attempts to kill.
All I can say is it's broad daylight, and it's a whole group of people. And
he kind of, like, growls at them a little bit.
Yeah, like, he bumps into one of them, too, so I thought, oh, shit, it's about to go down. But no, they just kind of walk.
And I thought they were going with, like, a weird Santa is an anti-Semite thing for a minute.
Oh.
But then he doesn't kill them, so I don't know, man.
I guess the real answer is, if he killed everybody he encountered, we'd be here all day.
I guess.
You know? At some point, you have to let somebody go.
I think the best thing to say is, it seems like Santa has a kill list. He's just not too concerned about collateral damage.
Oh.
So he's like...
fair. That's true, because he is like actually out to get, you know, Nick and his grandpa specifically, right?
Yes.
So
everybody else is just kind of,
yeah, they just get in the way.
I guess the folks in the opening, because he does come down their chimney and deliberately kills all of them.
And then Tiny Lister shows up in the movie for no goddamn reason.
Yeah, Tiny Lister as like just a random gas station attendant who's. Only scene exists to, like, what, sell Nick gum and...
Set up that something happened at the deli. I want to talk about this scene for a minute, though, because it starts, Nick goes into this gas station, Tiny Lister turns around, it is a reveal when it's Tiny Lister, because there's a music sting and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And he asked Tiny for some gum. Tiny gives him what I thought he was giving him. It says smoking gum. I thought he gave him nicotine gum.
Yes, I think it was supposed to be, like, Nicorette.
But, nicotine gum. The joke doesn't go anywhere, though.
Yeah, he just buys it, and then...
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, cool, I guess I'll chew this, too. Why not?
I guess I'll get addicted to gum.
Smoke them if you got them, right?
Yeah, and then he hears on the police scanner that Tiny has that that there was a disturbance at the deli. So he runs down there, gets kind of caught up.
All we see of Tiny. That's it.
But also, the reason that that's the only gun that he has, he explains, is because the truck driver who was supposed to deliver gum was murdered at the strip club.
That's right.
Just as a tangent, let's talk about product placement real quick.
Sure. What you got?
Pepsi. Pepsi fucking everywhere.
Yeah. There's a scene where Nick like goes home and opens up the fridge, and there's a very close up shot of like not just a can of Pepsi, but also like a can of Mug root beer.
Yeah, there's Orange Crush.
Orange Crush, whatever. Yeah.
Mm. And then behind Tiny, just out of place, just randomly on the wall, is a Pepsi logo sticker that's just there just to get the Pepsi logo in the scene. It's not a sign or anything.
Look, pal, if you want a Pepsi, you're going to have to pay for it.
But then in the deli, there's also a shelf of just random, like, canned goods and shit. I saw Hormel chili there. Why?
Bottom barrel kind of situation going on here.
Oh, boys, I have some breaking news that I have to tell y'all about.
Yes.
So, we talked about that first scene. I'm going straight back to the beginning of this movie. It all ties back in. So, Rebecca Gayhart, I'm looking at her Wikipedia page to find some more, you know, Christmas films she's in. And it says right here, Partners, 1986 to 1999, Brett Ratner. Who produced this film? Brett Ratner. So, I wonder, 5 years after they apparently split up, he finagled a way to get her into a movie and then kill her on screen.
Maybe they had an amicable split up. You never know.
Here's a fun fact about this movie on that subject. So one of the stunt people in it is Wanda Ferritin, who she said she only signed on to the movie because she thought that Santa was being played by Jeff Goldblum.
That's an excellent story. That's hilarious.
That's not the end of the story. The punchline is, then less than a year later, she married Bill Goldberg.
Huh. That's really funny. I hope they told that story at their wedding. That's great.
That's like the Christmas version of Bill Murray only did the Garfield films because he thought they were written by the Coen brothers.
Except with less marriage at the end. That's really cute, actually. That's really funny.
Yeah, you know, good for them.
I hope they got Mr. Goldblum to, like, come to their wedding or at least, like, record a short thing, because that'd be really funny.
Oh, if he had, like, officiated the wedding, that would have been great. Oh, boy. So where were we in this before I so rudely interrupted us? Oh, yeah. So Nick, before Mr. Green gets murdered, Nick realizes that something is going on. And he searches for Santa Claus, and he goes to a website to look up the Santa Tracker, the famous, like, NORAD Santa Tracker.
This was kind of funny. Santa Tracker.
Yeah.
Except it's called Gonad because I guess NORAD is a trademark term? Is that...
I don't believe so. It's just a government acronym.
No, the entire point is just, let's just make a dick joke. Why not?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, I know. The film is like wall-to-wall dick jokes. But that just stuck out to me, you know?
Yeah, speaking of sticking out like sore damn thumbs, all of the 2005-ness of the movie, James Caan calls Chris Kattan half of a word I'm not going to say that starts with F.
Oh, yeah.
When Mary gives Nick his Christmas present, he doesn't get what it is at first, and he's like, not to be ungrateful, but are you fucking a word that starts with R that I'm not going to say?
Yeah, are you a fucking Republican because she gives him a gun?
There we go.
But that's kind of funny because, like, he complained to her once that, you know, what he wanted was a transformer, and instead he gets an Easy Bake Oven for Christmas. So she gives him a gun that transforms into a transformer. So Santa finds out where Nick and Grandpa live. And Grandpa has a Santa bunker for just such an occasion, except it does not last but for maybe 2 seconds before Santa breaks in. And
yeah, and the only real thing the invention pays off is that Grandpa is constantly messing with this nutcracker, and he talks about something about, like, if you don't heat a chestnut up before you puncture it, it explodes or something like that. I forget exactly what it is.
If you don't puncture a chestnut before you heat it up, it explodes.
Yes, that's it. And apparently this nutcracker is designed to now fire like liquid metal chestnuts pretty much.
Yeah, so it's a high-powered automatic nutcracker, I guess. And at a certain point, we find out that Grandpa has gifted this to Nick with a message, a note saying, the only good Christmas gift is a practical Christmas gift. Gee, that's not going to come back into play later.
Chekhov's nutcracker.
Chekhov's nutcracker.
So when the movie finally starts to come together is when Santa figures out where they are. He comes, breaks into the house, they escape out like a secret passage, a fucking Code Père Noël secret passage through a boiler.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I did think of the exact same thing, Code Père Noël with the fridge.
They get onto a snowmobile, Santa kills Grandpa, after they argue like one of those, like, it's my old foe type of arguments, where it's like, man, you should have explained what this was about 5 minutes ago, that way we'd know, instead you're dead. Thanks, Grandpa.
That trope like gets so played out in so many things that I've seen recently. It's just, it drives me crazy. The whole like, oh, the young kid is destined for great things, but the older mentor doesn't want to explain to him yet, and he can't explain it to him properly because, you know, time's getting short, and now Santa is here and he's going to kill us all.
Do we have Star Wars to blame for that?
I think maybe
a little bit.
Because, yeah, like, Nick does not get a suitable explanation for any of the shit that's going on until Santa just shows up and says, hey, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, they get on the snowmobile. There's a chase scene. Mac punches the hell deer in the nose, which is pretty great.
Yeah, after there's a great shot of the hell deer, like, you know, bumping her right directly in the back. And she turns around and just punches it.
Because why not?
Why the hell not?
And they go past a group of biathlon skeet shooters that are going to become important pretty quickly.
And at this point, my notes give out. Because at this point, I think in the film, I just said, fuck it. I'm going to just watch the movie and have a good time.
You gave up.
What happens is they end up going to the old hell township. Like it's the other part of town. They go to the other part of town. That's where the school is.
I thought it was going to be like historical Williamsburg, but no, it's more just like, oh, this is just downtown.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of, it has that thing going on because it's like fur trappers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why the school is over there, but all right.
Yeah, it's like the town square. Yeah.
Yeah, they break into the school. They're trying to think up a plan. The best plan they have is to lead Santa back over to the skeet shooters and let him get shot a bunch, which, yeah, sure, why not?
Well, you're skipping a small part where they have the show off at the ice rink in the... For some reason, there's a hockey rink in the school.
Well, that's what they're getting to, yeah. Santa chased them around the school a bit. They get into the ice rink, yeah. Well, it's a school up north. They're going to have a hockey rink.
Because they think he's powerless after the showdown because they win the bet or whatever.
It's because of his stupid, you know, Games Illustrated clock. He thinks that if they can survive until the end of Christmas Day, Santa will be powerless.
Greenwich Mean Time. 7 p.m.
They're like, oh, what time do they use the North Pole? Greenwich Mean Time, right? Yeah, that works.
And then, you know, movie magic, movie bullshit, Goldberg Santa says, no, the North Pole is where all the time zones merge, so Christmas ends when I fucking say it.
Threatening, but strangely educational.
Goldberg has a lot of, like, really great stupid one-liners throughout it. Like, he picks up a copy of A Christmas Carol and just says, Christmas can really scare the dickens out of you.
Yes!
He's playing for himself. He's only trying to abuse himself.
It's great. It's maybe the best laugh in the movie.
The part where I actually laughed out loud was when he throws the book at Nick and hits Nick in the head. Nick is just like, that fucking hurts!
Oh, yeah, and then Nick complains about that for the next 5 minutes. Oh, he threw a book at me.
So then Santa shows up on a Zamboni, tries to chase them down. The Zamboni gets stuck in an angelic curling stone because Grandpa shows back up. He is the angel from the beginning who basically did Peter Pan and Hook. He was like, hey, I really want to fuck that woman. Guess I don't have powers no more.
Yeah, basically.
With Nick's grandpa. Or grandma. Nick's grandpa is the angel who gave up his immortality to be with Nick's grandma.
Convenient that he waited until about 20 years before the 1,000-year curse was lifted to decide this.
Yes. Yeah.
Santa just throws him down a hole into hell, though.
Yeah, he challenges them to a rematch, like a double or nothing. This one's for all the marbles rematch. Santa just throws him into the hole in the ice down to hell. They shoot him with the nutcracker, which actually makes him bleed, and it more seems to confuse Santa than anything else. Just like, oh wow, they can actually do that.
It's very
strange. It gets him to back off. That's what it is.
Then they act like Santa, I guess, kind of lost the bet. Because I guess he didn't use the stone or something.
Oh, right, because they throw Santa's stone in the hole.
And then they're like, now he's powerless for some reason.
Yeah, like they keep assuming that they know what the rules are, and Santa keeps saying, fuck you, no, these are the rules.
So, yeah, they run back out to the skeet shooters where Mac's older brother Sean is there as one of them. And also the guy who was using the voice box.
Yeah.
It's a guy who was in Dance of the Wolves, but also he was in Reindeer Games as the bartender at the casino, I think.
Huh.
Oh, wow.
That's a callback and a half.
So they decide they see the reindeer come, and basically they're like, hey, you want to bag a big buck? And so they all start shooting the reindeer, and then the reindeer blows the fuck up with a bazooka. Because Mac's dad shows up with a bazooka that the guy with the voice box won him with camel cash, basically.
Yeah. And he goes, it cost me a lung. Which is honestly a pretty good joke.
It's so fucking stupid, I love it.
Yeah, and John, you made the perfect comparison to this earlier in our chat thread. You compared this to Jack Frost 2.
Yeah, it knows exactly how stupid it's going to be, and it's just like, man, this is what we're doing.
Yeah. At a certain point, you do just have to have fun with it. Because I don't think at any point they thought they were making, like, real, either a real horror movie or a real comedy or just real art.
Or Christmas movie. It's kind of none of the above.
So they come up to Santa, who's been impaled on the flagpole. And then this paramedic shows up with a saw. Every single like side character like this is convinced that they are going to be like the breakout wacky character. It's amazing.
Yes.
He has like the jaws of life. He's like, stand back. It's going to get messy.
And then I love it. It cuts back later to after he's cut it off. The pole is still intact. He cut the corpse up instead of just cutting the flagpole down.
Yeah. It's very good. It's a good goof.
Oh, but, God, that's gross.
The Santa corpse is actually the pastor who was at the, well, like a Christmas party thing.
He gets like run over by the hell deer and gets knocked into Santa's sleigh, and Santa just knocks him out because I guess he knows he's going to use him later.
Yeah. So they take the Santa book from Nick's grandpa and are like, we're gonna need this next year. And then it cuts to Goldberg at the Winnipeg airport, dressed like a character from Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, he's dressed like a biker. He's got the biker vest on with like all the iron crosses and shit.
And the beanie.
And he just kinda buys his plane ticket and sits down with the old ladies, and that's that. And then roll credits, right? And if you watch through to the end credits, which I assume none of us did.
Oh, I did.
Okay.
So I want to know who made all this fucking music. There's so much music in this movie, and a lot of it's original.
There is, but there's also a lot of, like, you know, royalty-free covers of real songs, too.
Yeah.
The kind of shit that you would listen to on Amazon if you're just, like, go to Amazon Music and just hit random play on whatever. You'll get, like, the opening credits of this film play over like a weird sound-alike cover of Darlene Love's Christmas, you know, Baby Please Come Home, and it's jarring. Like, it's obviously a sound-alike that they couldn't afford the original, but the whole movie is like this. The whole movie feels like a sound-alike of a real Christmas horror movie.
Yeah, a lot of the music involved these two guys, Jim Diamond or Danny Sabre, one or the other.
Okay.
And there's really nothing to say about them. They're just a couple of random soundtrack guys. Danny Sabre has been in the soundtrack for a lot of shit. He did a couple of the Blade movies, Moulin Rouge.
Oh wow.
Yeah, he's done a lot of weird shit. Rugrats movie, Scooby Doo. It looks like he does a lot of like music made for movies in particular, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah.
Like the song about the movie that appears in the movie type of thing.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Oh, he did Song for Holly and Go. There we go. That's a connection.
Hey, there you go.
And Jim Diamond, Benny Hill. That's all I see on his.
Benny Hill.
Yeah, he did one episode. He had a song in one episode of the Benny Hill Show.
Jeez. Oh, man.
But yeah, this guy, Jim Diamond, his band's called Jim Diamond's Pop Monsoon. He's credited as the producer in this movie of the songs Christmas Baby, Please Come Home, Don't Cry, Theme from Gold Diggers, Christmas Time, Bye Bye Santa, Christmas in Detroit. And he's the writer of the last, like, four of those as well.
Okay. So they didn't go out and just get royalty-free covers. They just had their house band do all the songs themselves.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Which, well, Jim Diamond's Pop Monsoon sounds like the kind of band that would be like the house band on a Comedy Central, like, game show in fucking 1997. Like, how that show Let's Bowl had the world's most dangerous polka band on it.
Oh, yeah.
There's a deep fucking cut for you.
Find that, Joe. I remember Let's Bowl and being just baffled by it. Like, wow.
Speaking of lost media, if anyone out there can find this, I am so pissed. I cannot find the bit from Viva Variety where they sing like a reggae song about a Robert De Niro impersonator.
Please, listeners, if you're out there and you know anything, if you could find this for us, we would love to see it. Email it to us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. But yeah, that's Santa's sleigh, everybody. It's a wild ride. It's kind of funny. Whoa.
It's way better than I expected it to be. I'll give it that.
Yes, definitely.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at it and it's like, okay, this is definitely just a gag, a goof. And it kind of is, but it's pretty fun. So go ahead.
A couple more things. Probably my biggest attraction for it is the character of Nick is written kind of in that way where they don't really know the difference between being funny and being an asshole.
I think that's also 2005 for you.
Because when they're in the chase with Santa's chasing him on the snowmobile, Mary's yelling at him like, you know, go left, go into the woods, go out of the woods. And he's just like, gee, you think? To everything she says.
He's got Tim Allen syndrome. Like, he just can't not be sarcastic.
Yeah.
It's the worst. But he's also a lot like, I was watching the original Fright Night the other night. He's a lot like the main character in that, where he just is absolutely, like, allergic to his own girlfriend.
Yeah. Like, Mary spends the entire movie basically being, hey, you know this pickup I have? We can just go fuck in the bed of it at any given time. And he's just kind of like, wow, weird.
I'm gonna insult your dad and avoid touching you when you need me to touch you to push you through a window. Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's a scene where they're breaking into the school, and, like, she smashes a window and tries, like, she gets him to pick her up and, like, put her through the window, and she gets stuck at one point, and he doesn't have the nerve to just, like, grab her chest and push down so that she can fit through the hole. And
the line is what? It's Nick, like, am I gonna have to make every first move in this relationship?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that's a line he hasn't crossed yet, apparently. God, this guy sucks. John, you're right.
Yeah, a lot of movies like this will... This movie has enough other things to save it, because it's not really trying for much anyway, so it doesn't have to try very hard. But a lot of movies like this do kind of live and die on how much of a piece of shit the main character is.
Yeah.
Like, imagine Gremlins if Billy was just a real fucking asshole.
Yeah, you'd start rooting for the Gremlins at a certain point, wouldn't you? You kind of start rooting for Santa, because it seems like he's going after a while, at least, it seems like he's going after just the worst people.
Yeah, he just kind of Rickies it up for a little bit.
Exactly. But I'm honestly surprised they didn't follow this up with a sequel.
They certainly try to. They certainly set it up for one.
Oh, yeah. Because after the end credits, we get Goldberg looking at his naughty list and looking directly into the camera and giving his catchphrase, "Who's next?" Well, yeah. With that said, let's hop on over to the crankometer so we can rate this puppy and go about our day. So if you're new to this podcast, welcome. Hi, hello. We have a long back catalog for you to listen to. Please enjoy any or all of them. But the crankometer, if you are new, is our patented XY-axis for how to rate these Christmas movies. The X-axis is the Christmas quotient, how Christmassy a film is, and the Y-axis is the quality quotient, how good the film is. So, gentle friends, Santa's sleigh. How Christmassy is this?
Yeah, it's okay. I would almost give it a carbon neutral Christmas rating. It's there. It's Santa. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe a one.
I mean, yeah, it's not a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Well, and I'll say this.
Doesn't really do a whole lot with it though.
Yeah, that's maybe it's true. I'll say this though. Part of Nick's like plan, or one thing that Nick frequently says in their fight against Santa Claus is, if they can defeat Santa, Christmas will be over. Like, if they kill Santa Claus, Christmas will just cease to exist.
That'd be so neat in world, in universe.
Oh,
that'd be interesting.
It would be a great twist, yeah, because in this universe, Christmas is a holiday designed to placate God, basically, or placate Satan, to stop him from sending his son to murder people on Christmas. Christmas Eve.
Maybe a two. I don't know. Like, there's enough going on with the plot that's like related to Christmas. The Christ Mass, like begging for Santa to not come kill you. The reason the presents are delivered is because he lost a bet. I guess I could give it like a two, maybe. I think there's enough going on.
Yeah, I think the ceiling is a two, honestly. I don't think it's that Christmassy a film. And if you took Christmas out of it and you just made him just some crazy killer out to murder two teenagers, it wouldn't lose a whole lot.
Yeah, but then there's the whole, like, it explains the actual origin of Christmas as we know it, which is worth something. It's as far as, like, dressing and the feeling, which I guess is what we usually kind of go off of for how Christmassy something is.
Yeah.
Not particularly so.
That's true.
This could just take place in winter, really.
But also there's that weird streak near the beginning where, you know, the old lady yells at Mr. Green for saying happy holidays and say, God damn it, it's Christmas. And
yeah,
you kind of get the feeling that they're going to play that game for a while of this being very specifically a Christmas film and not like some kind of holiday what have you.
But then they
don't. They kind of drop that, yeah.
So I don't know. There's also
a two is.
I'd say a one or a two.
John, split the difference here.
What is it going to be?
I'll go with a two because there's a nutcracker involved as a gun.
Okay,
fair enough.
That's a good point.
You know what? That's as good a reason as any. So then, the y-axis. How? I mean, this is going to be tough because how good is Santa's sleigh? It's not very good, but I mean...
But it's fun as hell.
I was entertained, which I was not feeling so hot last night when I started this movie. And if this were a number of films that we've done, I'd be like, oh, screw this. I'm watching it tomorrow when I feel better. But I powered through. It was pretty fun.
And there's something to be said for a short film, too.
Oh my god, yes!
I mean, a combination of it being so short and it just starting so wackily, I guess. I mean, I sat and paid attention for the entire damn thing.
Yeah, this also got my undivided attention. And I did not fast forward through this one.
Brad did not watch this on 1.5 speed, didn't he?
No, I didn't.
Good, good.
I mean, it was also 70 minutes long, so whatever, but... If this were 2 hours long, maybe I would have broken out the extension, but
I think for me personally, it was fun enough, but I wasn't 100% on board. Like I wish there had been like some extra little like oomph to it or something, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't like a full romp, but it was good enough. It's like solid B grade, you know, comedy horror material. It's not like the Evil Dead or whatever, but it'll do.
Right.
You know?
Are we prepared to give this a solid 2-2?
Well, I'm down with it.
I think so.
That's surprising to me.
I never would have guessed in a million years.
I never would have guessed that we would rate a film like this so high. And even then, it's only so high. We're only saying it's so good, but you know what? It's pretty fun.
I'm going to level with you. I don't know if you've ever gotten the feeling for this or if I've said this before, and I'm going to lay my cards on the table here. Not a huge fan of, like, Christmas horror, but this worked for me.
I mean, I guess to compare it to the film we watched a year ago, to, you know, a year ago at this time, Silent Night, Deadly Night 3, we gave it a positive 2, negative 1.
Yeah, that movie was bad.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Bad enough that we're not continuing with Silent Night 4 for the foreseeable future.
Well, that's because we know what Silent Night 4 is.
I didn't even know that existed.
Brad, we talked about this. There are 5 of these films.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Silent Night 4 has nothing to do with Christmas, and instead it has Clint Howard doing sex assaults.
I memory hold all of this, and I'm thanks for that.
Probably for the best.
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. I don't think we have a pressing need to watch Silent Night 4 anytime soon.
Okay.
Unless somebody specifically requests it from us, I'm going to say we're gonna leave those.
Well, now that you say that, somebody's gonna request it. Just torture us. You know that, right?
I do. I absolutely do, and I'm expecting someone out there to. I'm expecting all of our listeners out there to respect our time and say, no, I'm not going to ask that they do that. Knowing full well that I am playing a fool's game right now.
Yeah, fuck it. Ask that we do Ronin instead. That has Christmas decorations in it for like a half of a scene. It's a Christmas movie. Fuck it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I like distinctly remember bringing up Ronin like 3 or 4 years ago and you basically shrugging it off saying, yeah, no, whatever.
Well, then we decided it was more fun to just watch what the fuck ever.
Oh, it's fun when John does it, but when I do it, it's fuck you. I get it.
Yes, exactly.
I see how this game is played. Okay, fair enough. Well, you know what? I'm just going to mark it. The most unexpected result. Santa's Sleigh has scored a 2-2.
Santa's Sleigh has scored a 173-0.
Not only have we broken the crankometer, we have bent it sideways. But yeah, that's how we're going to fall on Santa's Sleigh. It's a fun enough time if you're willing to entertain it, but don't go into it expecting
magic.
It's a great way to waste an hour.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a great way to waste an hour. That's perfect. So yeah, that's Santa's Sleigh. Also, I guess we never even mentioned it. It's, if you want to watch it right now, it's streaming on Tubi, which is one of those real fun free streaming sites that does, you know, they show commercials during they show ads during the movies, but they also have like a very deep bench of just real weird shit.
Yeah,
there's also a rip on YouTube that is literally the first result, so nobody's really chasing after the copyright claims.
Oh no, I very much doubt this. This movie apparently only made like $6,000 in theaters. Oops. Imagine anybody actually trying to make money off this anymore. So with that being said, let's continue home with the horror days, everybody. We've got a long Halloween to go, or whatever you want to call it, and we'll see what the next month brings us. But I'm struggling to find a way to end this show now, so if anybody would like to pull me up out of this nosedive, I would very much appreciate it.
We're just going to let you struggle.
Okay, I'm just flapping in the breeze. Okay, fuck you guys.
No. If you want to get in touch with us, there's many ways to do that. Drop us a link. We're on all of the social media platforms that are commonly used these days. We also have an email account. It is, it's been how many years and I can't remember it? XmasCreeps?
XmasCreeps@gmail.com? Yes, you got it. XmasCreeps@gmail.com.
Great. Brad
finally got it. It's only been 6 years.
And go out your front door and yell. If you live near any of us, we might respond.
Yes, and also if you want to leave us a review, we'd be eternally grateful, or send us some constructive criticism. That'd be awesome, too. We appreciate you listening.
Here. If you want to go on Tubi, I got a recommendation for you. Anybody out there, here's your evening. Watch Face Off, Deep Impact, and Resident Evil.
Happy Halloween, wow, everybody.
What a night.
Oh, man. That sounds like a perfect Saturday or Sunday evening. I don't know what day it is anymore. So, friends, Romans, if you have anything to send to us, you know, go ahead and send a request for episodes, because we have proven now that we can do it. We have the technology to actually do listener requests.
Here's a dangerous thought. All of the listener requests that we've done have actually been really good, because we did this. We did Tokyo Godfathers. We did Wish Springs at Work. They're all pretty good. do our listeners actually have very good taste?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they do because they're listening to us.
Whoa! But yeah, our listeners actually have really good taste in movies, and we should pay attention to it more, is what we're saying.
Yes.
So, friends, go watch something spooky. Go drink a spooky beer of some kind. And we'll see you down the road in a couple of short weeks, because we've got more holiday horror left to bring you this home for the horror days. So, with that being said, I'm Joseph Wade.
I am Johnny Five, the human robot.
And I'm Bradford.
Wishing you a fine, festive, fun, and funky October. Good night, everybody.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.